I was just like, Vogue, you guys are the same people. I said this. I was like, this is the same magazine that said, that posted on Instagram not even a few days ago, like, activism is chic, get involved. And you guys are really, it's offensive. There's people that are dying over these pro. It's like the same thing that people from the Pepsi commercial. Like, I get that you want people to get involved, but
no, that's unacceptable.
It's not acceptable. It's totally tone deaf.
Yeah.
And stop wasting everyone's time. If you're going to have us all come here, then let's get straight to the chase.
Yes.
If not, then keep talking about whatever you guys want to talk about. But don't pretend to want to make a difference.
That's today's guest, Rachel Omondi. She said those words in a room full of the most influential, important people in fashion at Vogue's headquarters. Anna Wintour herself was in the audience. It speaks to why this interview was so much fun. Rachel is smart. She's outspoken. She's opinionated. And she has just an amazing backstory. I hope you guys loved the episode. And I just also want to say thank you to everyone who listens to this show. You know, I make this on the side on top of my, you know, full-time job, and I do it out of love. So every single person who subscribes, who tells a friend, I am so, so grateful. And if you're listening to the show on the iTunes podcast app, you can really help me out by leaving a rating or a review, 5 stars if you're happy. I want to hear from you guys. All right, without further ado, let's get to this conversation. It's a good one.
Hello, hello, it's Brooke Devard. You're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. I'm sitting here with Rachel Omondi. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, perfectly.
Esteemed fashion designer who I feel like I've followed you for a while, but we're meeting for the first time today.
Yes.
And I feel like you have a lot to say. Just because, let me tell you what, you know, you've been written about, you know, The Fader did a great piece on you.
Yeah.
There was a great piece on you from New York Mag.
Yeah.
And I almost felt like those articles weren't long enough to contain your story. Like, I imagine that the journalists were sitting with you like, oh my gosh, this girl is so candid. She's like saying so much about the fashion industry that no one ever says, right?
Yeah, I suppose so. When it comes to the fashion industry, there's a lot of tiptoeing. I'm just not really like a tiptoeing kind of person.
Yes. You talked about like how Fashion Week's not for you.
Yeah.
You talked about all of the bullshit in the industry.
Yeah.
And you don't hear that a lot. So it was like, for me at least as a reader, it was like refreshing. It was like, oh, wow, who is this like young girl with such a strong point of view?
Yeah.
Who's not afraid to say what she thinks.
I don't think it's that scary. It's, you know, sometimes when you say things that are unpopular opinions, it almost terrifies other people more than it scares you. And they're kind of shocked.
True.
And they're like, I can't believe you're saying, you know.
True,
and I'm kind of like, it's not that crazy. It's like almost like, I don't know, this might be a silly example, but I would liken it to getting a meal at a restaurant that you weren't satisfied with and wanting to return it and exchange it.
Some
and
people are weird about that.
Some people are very weird about that, and I've always been the type of person, like, why are you...
Of course.
So like, of
course.
Like,
it's your money. Like, just
ask
for what you want.
Exactly.
And they'll make it again. I have a quote of yours that I'm obsessed with that I have to pull up from... I think this was something that you said to The Fader... Okay, so the question is, you said the brand is an autobiographical look at yourself. Do you find it hard to stay true to yourself, to tell the story through your experience? And your response was, no, because that's the whole point of self. It's not hard to be yourself. That sounds very patronizing for people who are still trying to find out what that means. But once you find it, it's not that hard. It's the most natural thing you could ever do. You never really second guess it. It's really fucking easy. It's the greatest scam of all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was like, that is brilliant and such a, it's a simplistic distillation of what it means to be yourself,
mm-hmm.
but I think that people do overthink it,
mm-hmm.
and they spend their life thinking, like, who am I, and what does it all mean?
And I know that the reason why I said that can come off very patronizing is because I do understand that place of kind of trying to figure out what that means for you. I definitely don't think I ever struggled with it as much as maybe some people do.
Mm.
I've gone through phases and things here and there, and of course you're always learning about yourself, but I don't think I truly ever struggled with being myself the way I've heard some people describe it. Mm-hmm. The only person that knows how to do it is you.
Exactly.
And there's no one else who can tell you how to be yourself except
yes.
for you. And
did you go through that like awkward middle school?
No.
Never.
I didn't, no.
Interesting. So wait, tell me a little bit more about kind of growing up. Like, take me back to, like, you're 13. What's life like?
13 years old, I was in 7th grade. I was going to a private Christian school in Champaign, Illinois called Judah Christian School.
Very different from your lifestyle now, I would imagine.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you live in...
I live in Brooklyn.
You live in Brooklyn. Yeah. You're like...
And I do what I want. I work for myself, and so I'm very free in that sense. But yeah, I was going to a private Christian school that was predominantly white, but also just very small in general.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up... I mean, my parents are Kenyan, but I grew up... I was born in Oklahoma. We moved around a lot, and we were not Army brats. That's everyone's second question. I grew up mainly in the Midwest.
Okay. So between, like, the Midwest and Kenya.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And always small towns in the Midwest. Never anywhere big, never anywhere poppin'. Like, always very small towns. And so that was my upbringing. But in terms of, like, having an awkward... teenage stage, no. Or I don't know, I guess maybe other people could say that, but
no, but if you didn't feel it, that's amazing.
I didn't feel that. I think I dealt with like normal things, like I never really had like body image issues or like self-hate kind of issues with my image. I was always very personable in terms of like making friends. I just had a normal...
And when you went, so where in Kenya were you going? Were you going to
Nairobi? Mainly.
So when you went to Nairobi, did you feel out of place there? Or did you also kind of like seamlessly just fit it? Like, did you feel like an American outsider?
I definitely felt American. It's a weird dichotomy because that's home to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever they referred to it as home.
Right.
So, and even sometimes I say that. I catch myself saying that, like, oh, when I'm back home. But I actually was born and raised in America.
Yes. I've never been to East Africa. But one of the things that strikes me when I go to a place that has all brown people is, like, looking around and just seeing, like, everyone around me is black. Not even in Harlem anymore can you really experience that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe and I've never been to Nairobi, maybe there are lots of white people in Nairobi, but
Everyone's
black. I would imagine if I went to a place like that at a young age, I would be very struck by the fact that everyone around me, everywhere I looked, was black.
This might sound really strange, but I don't even think I was aware that I was black until at least... maybe like middle school.
Interesting.
Or something.
Interesting.
So it's not like I went to Kenya and was like, oh, everyone's black here. And I went to back home and I was like, everyone's white. I don't, even when I was around all white kids.
You didn't
think
of it that way.
During kindergarten, first grade, second grade, it never occurred to me.
Interesting.
At all.
Interesting. Interesting. I don't want to say you're like a pro black designer, but you've been very open
but
about
it. I am, yeah.
Yeah, you think you love black girls, you want to cast black girls in your campaigns, you're like an advocate for women with dark skin. So it's interesting to me to hear that you didn't see yourself as black until like middle school.
It didn't occur to me, which it does sound really weird, doesn't
well,
it? You know, when I look back at my childhood, I was totally unaware of anything image-wise. My hair being ashy. I mean, if you look at pictures of me, I was just like a kid. I was just playing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that my best friends were white. It didn't occur. It really, truly didn't occur to me. When I was in middle school, I think, I don't know. It's interesting that we're talking about this because I actually haven't thought about it as much ever as I am right now, which sounds strange.
As an adult, I rarely think about my adolescence, but then when you think about it, you're like, oh wow, that's kind of why I am the way I am.
Yeah, and then when I went to public school, public high school specifically, I think that's where the shift actually happened for me being like, oh, I'm a black girl.
Yes, yes. When you were in high school, who were the black like celebrities or musicians who were popular? For me, it was like seeing the popularity of Destiny's Child. I was like, oh, I kind of look like them. Like, that's like when I started like identifying more with black culture. And that was way before high school. That was like, you know, 10 years old.
It was Destiny's Child was definitely one for sure. Naomi.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Erica, really any black girl I could get my hands on, I was going to cling on to for dear life.
I know.
You know, in any form that they came in. So like acting, musician, I've never forget, I told her this, you know, back in high school days, I had like collage galore, you know, I was mood boarding way before I knew I was mood boarding.
Yes.
But I had this picture of Erykah Badu with like a huge fro and ripped up denim and Converse and just a wife beater, and I thought it was like the most natural, cool, like black girl that I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I remember seeing Erykah Badu and being like, whoa, like,
and just
people
there was
are
no,
that cool.
Yeah, there was no, like I said, any black girl I saw at that point, I was like, her, that's me. I'm that version. You know, when it came to Spice Girls, I wanted to be Scary Spice.
Yeah, so does that kind of inform your decisions around like casting all black models?
but in my mind, I live in a world where all girls are black.
Right.
And so I kind of, I guess, illustrate that by what I'm doing. But mainly because I, during high school and so forth, I realized how hard it actually was to be a black girl, especially for like girls like you or me that were into fashion and
oh my God.
Into style and all these things that
there
I
like
felt
two people.
Like. Yeah, totally, totally.
And that's why I think the internet is so great, right? Girls grow up having the internet so they can find people that look like them doing
yeah.
interesting
and
things.
Lucky for them because, I mean, when I was in high school, I felt very alienated
yeah.
by the fact that all of it, the whole experience, not high school per se. Like,
mm-hmm.
again, I wasn't bullied. I had really good friends. Like, I had a great time.
Mm-hmm.
I had a good experience. But that was, like, me more so coming into my, like, oh, I'm a black girl, and I can't wear my hair wet to school, and I can't, you know what I mean? Or even just being, like, ashamed of my hair, which I didn't realize until, you know, until hindsight. Like, I didn't know that I didn't know. I didn't know that I didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And that the reason why I wore micro braids all the time was because I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
Right.
And there wasn't really, like, any proper platform for me to like learn about myself, which sounds really bizarre, but even with me going to Kenya all the time, I didn't grow up with my mother, so it was
right.
just me and my father, and so he wasn't obviously the best person to like teach me how to be a woman. He
oh,
was in his own way, but
yeah,
not really.
Yeah, yeah, but he wasn't doing your hair in the morning.
No.
Yeah,
and so just like all of those things, or just trying to play with makeup for the
mm-hmm.
first time and not really seeing your color anywhere. And
I know.
It's weird to live in America. This is the kind of subtleties that I think people don't really understand who are not people of color, but it's weird to live in America, born and raised. Like,
yeah.
I'm an American,
mm-hmm.
and to just be very aware that a lot of the corporations that exist just flat out are not speaking to you.
Absolutely.
So when it comes to like trying on makeup or like, you know, at that age, girls are shaving for the first time, they're tanning maybe for the first time, they're experimenting with makeup or like any type of like beauty healthcare
mm-hmm,
regimen,
mm-hmm.
and so like sleepover talk.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And you just can't identify with it, or I have to do this, or I have to put lotion on when I leave the shower, or I have to put oil
yes.
in my hair. Just certain things that because you're different, you feel like not even outcasted, but just separated.
You become aware of that difference.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you first start experimenting with like makeup and changing your hair?
I think makeup 7th grade a little bit. And
okay.
then in high school, I don't really feel like I wore makeup that much. I think I wore like mascara more. And then I think college, I would say I really started experimenting more.
And I feel like you change your hair a lot. Like I remember a few months ago, you had like platinum blonde hair.
Yeah.
How did you just like bleach it all?
Yeah.
And then...
Yep.
So I've never dyed my hair lighter. I really want to, but I'm afraid to because I feel like the chemicals are really intense.
They are.
What is the process? And also, is your hair natural?
Yes, it's natural.
Okay.
I don't really... So, okay, let me just take you back. When I was living... Okay, so actually, I remember you from Glamorous Eccentric. That's like was my first introduction to you.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
That was my blog when
mm-hmm.
I think I was... in college.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember. And I have to explain all
Wait,
this to
this
preface.
Wait, this is so insane.
I have to say all this to preface where I'm going with it. But basically, I remember Glamorous Eccentric.
So nice.
I had a blog at the time called The Milk and Wine. And
Okay.
We were like blogger friends. Like we would like
Whoa.
Comment on each other's stuff.
Wait, this is really insane.
Yeah.
So like we're actually like childhood friends.
Yeah.
Basically we've known each other for like 10 years.
Yeah, we can run with that.
Oh my gosh, because The Glamorous Eccentric, I think I started in like 2008, like it's like old.
Oh no, I remember.
Like 2007.
Oh yeah.
So this like okay.
This
oh my god.
Way back, right?
Yes. Okay. Please
so
continue.
So I knew. I saw this girl named Brooke. She had this blogger. She was this black girl that lived in New York that I thought had really great style. And at the time, you know, blogging was new, and I hadn't seen that. And I was
yeah.
like, oh, I like her follow. And I think we just like it wasn't extensive. It was like we commented on each other's blog spots
mm-hmm,
sometimes
mm-hmm.
or whatever. And then I was living in Atlanta, and then I started seeing you in Atlanta. Often.
Oh, like from like the whole late boots.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that's that girl's blog I follow. But you
oh
were
gosh.
More like, or I don't know, to correct me if I'm wrong, you were more like on the AUC, which I never went over there.
Okay.
That like totally was not my scene, but I have girlfriends like went to Spelman and stuff like
okay.
that. And so I'd like seen pictures more so of you over there. And then when I was living in Atlanta, it's like Weave capital
oh,
of the world.
Oh my God.
And coming from, yeah, right?
I was not prepared. Like I would go to class and everyone was so dressed up and I was like, wait. And they would be like, are you going to do something with your hair? Like, are you? Like,
yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, wait, I'm not prepared for like Southern beauty.
Yeah.
It's really intense.
It's on another level.
Yeah.
But that being said, I was like very excited to participate in like weave culture at the time.
Yes,
I was
weave
like, oh my
culture.
God, not only is there weaves out here, but they're done to like perfection.
They are done to perfection.
Like, I'm all about it. So when I was there, I had a weave in most of the time, and my hair grew a lot, actually.
Yeah, because it's protected.
But little did I know that. I still was like, I don't know what to do with my hair, so I'm not going to touch it. You know?
And now then, they call that a protective style.
Exactly.
A weave is a protective style, yeah.
A rose by any other name. She'd smell sweet. But so it was really after I left there that I was like, had this kind of epiphany where I was like, I'm going to do whatever I want with my hair, because I felt like I was too dependent on wearing a weave.
Yes, yes.
And that was just something I was not into.
But I'm the same way. I had crochet braids in, so I had like a weave essentially. And now I'm wearing my natural hair. And
which looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
It does.
And the thing is, I don't get weaves put in because I don't like the way my hair looks. I just like can't deal with it. Like, sometimes, like, at night, like, I just don't want to, like, twist it, and then I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, oh, like, what do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
There's something so easy about just, like, mm-hmm. having someone else's hair in your head. But, okay.
Sure. And there's nothing wrong with that, but
yeah.
I wasn't at that place
okay.
at the time.
Okay.
It was literally, like, I didn't know what to do, and
yes.
I didn't want to deal with
right.
it. And then I just am the type of person that I don't want to be a slave to anything.
Yes,
to anything.
Yes, and dependent on a hairdresser to take it out, like, so you can feel even able to walk outside.
Yeah, that's not healthy.
Yes.
My point is, since that moment, which was like six years ago, I think, I totally stopped caring about what happened to my hair. I did not care. I shaved it.
You
I grew it back out.
You weren't doing like
again.
Length checks. And, like,
no,
the whole
no, no,
like,
no.
natural hair community obsession with
you know,
growing your hair long. Okay.
No. The minute that I got to that place mentally and within myself, I was like down for whatever.
Okay.
And so that meant like I would wear box braids. I shaved my head. I grew it out. I cut it again.
How was it having a shaved head?
It was interesting. Yeah, it was cool. It was interesting. I mean, it was obviously the easiest style ever, but I already feel that I dress somewhat of a tomboy, and so with a shaved head, I didn't feel like I could do that as much, so
yes.
I definitely, like, girled it up a bit more. Like,
I felt the same. When I first,
yeah.
like, did my big chop, as they call it, and I had
mm-hmm.
super short hair, I was, like, doing the most with my makeup,
yeah.
like, big earrings, like, just to try to make yourself feel more feminine,
mm-hmm.
but actually, you don't need that, because when I see girls with super short hair, like, a shaved head, even if they are like in a tomboy outfit, they still look feminine. You know, what
mm-hmm.
makes you feminine isn't really your hair.
For sure.
But
for
you just,
sure.
You get
That's
those wires crossed.
And it's also like how you want to feel.
Exactly.
So I would definitely like wear maybe like a pop of color of lipstick or like earrings
mm-hmm.
or just more jewelry in general, stuff like that. But I mean, that eventually grew out, and I at one point like was just keeping it like in cornrows, like
okay.
straight up like D'Angelo style,
yes.
like just wearing my natural hair. But I was kind
cornrows.
Of like, at that point, I was kind of playing with my hair for the first time really ever, you know? So I had grown it out, and I decided that I wanted to bleach it.
So did you go to a professional to get it bleached?
Yes. I texted my friend who's a beauty editor at New York Magazine, and I was like, where do I go? This is what I want
to
do.
Wait, who did you text?
Tahara Hairston.
Okay. I think Chrissy talked about her
yeah.
in her podcast. Okay.
And,
gotta meet this woman. I keep hearing about her.
Yes. I texted Tahara. Hi, Tahara. And I said, I sent her a picture of these like Melanesian kids. I'm sure you've seen them. These kids on like that live off the coast of Africa that grow blonde hair.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And I was like,
do they also have light eyes?
Some of them.
Some of them, yeah.
But some of them are, like, dark. Like, darker
yeah,
than
Yeah,
darker than
blonde hair, yeah.
And I was like, I want this look. And she was like, you're going to think this is crazy, but you need to go see this white girl in Brooklyn. And I was
you
like, what?
Like, whoa,
and
I'm
so
going to a white person to get my hair done? Yeah, that would throw me
what?
For a loop.
But I went to go see her, and she dyed my hair, and she did a double process, and then I went back again, like, 4 months
later. Sorry, you're going too fast. What is a double process?
To be honest, I don't even know.
Okay.
We did it twice.
So she put some stuff in your hair. It gets washed out,
mm-hmm.
put more stuff in your hair.
Again, and I wanted to do it again. Because she didn't believe me, but I was like, I'm here to go all the way.
Okay.
And so I think the first time she did it, she was trying to like test drive.
Yes, like
and then,
how committed is she really to having like platinum blonde hair?
Yeah, and also she's a white woman that dealt with predominantly black clients. Like she lived
really?
Worked in a black salon. Yeah, for sure.
Interesting.
So, so we did that, and then we rinsed it out, and I saw, and I was like, I don't think you get me.
You're like, I need to go more.
We're going all the
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, you know, sometimes it's a little bit jolting for women who've never done this before, and your scalp might burn a bit. And I'm like, I've had a relaxer before. Like, I can definitely, like, girl.
Yeah. A white woman's telling me, like,
yeah.
what I can, like, do you know what we've been through with our hair? Like, do you know the kind of, like,
exactly.
horrible burning sensations we've experienced? Okay.
So then we did it again, which is a crazy thing. That what did make me nervous is that you can't bleach wet hair. So we actually had to dry it again and then bleach it again.
Blow dry it and then put, oh my God.
And then do it again.
You weren't worried about your hair at all.
I didn't care.
Yeah, you were just like, it's just, that's the thing though, it's just hair.
It's just hair. Like at that point, when you've been, buzzed your head, shaved, like that's the worst that it could possibly be, the quote unquote worst.
Yeah.
And I've and I did that with like ease to me, you know, like I felt confident and comfortable. So I was like, I'm just here to experiment. Like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And yeah, and I loved it.
It looked amazing. I was like dying over your pictures.
Amazing. I loved it. And I did not take nearly enough pictures.
Yeah,
of
you
it.
Should have taken more pictures.
I know. So I did it again.
Oh, you did it again.
Like 3 months later, 3 or 4 months later, when I had like maybe like 2 or 3 inches of roots in, I did it again. And then that was really fun. And then it just started to like break off. And I was just doing too much. Like, because. I mean, I took good care of it, and there was a whole new regimen that I needed, obviously, having blonde hair, but I was definitely, like, going a little bit overboard, because to be fair, I'm not, like, that's why it's crazy that we're even talking about beauty with me, because I'm not that girl. I'm not the, like, black girl who's doing the best job taking care of her hair. Like, I don't wrap it at night. I don't, like, do deep conditionings every week or whatever, like, people are supposed to be doing. Like, I didn't, so there was a lot of times that... Honestly, with bleach blonde hair.
Yeah, you need a lot of care.
I had a satin pillowcase, and I think that was about as far as I took it.
That's something.
And so when it started to break off, I was like, okay, I think I should chill. And so then I started putting it in braids and like,
you have blonde highlights in your braids now, and that looks really good.
Yeah,
that's the other thing that's great about like adding hair, because you can experiment with color and all of that stuff. Do you feel like you get sick of hairstyles often? That's like my biggest issue.
I feel like
even if I'm wearing my natural hair, I'll be into it for a while, and then, like, after 2 months, I'm like, I need to do something with my hair, and then I'll get something put in, and I'll like it at first, and I'll be like, oh, I need to do something with my hair.
Yeah, always. I think that's just... I don't know. I don't even want to, like, marginalize it. I was going to say maybe that's, like, black women, but maybe that's just women, but maybe that's just you and me. I don't know.
You know what? What I'm realizing from talking to all types of women is it's just women. So, like... You know, my friend Lucy will always be like, should I grow out my bangs? Like, should I get this haircut? People will be like, oh, should I get highlights? Like, people, women in general, not guys. Guys just have
the
easiest with everything. But I feel like girls in general are always, like, between hairstyles, haircuts, figuring out what they want to do next. Because it's such a, I feel like the way your hair looks really impacts
you.
Yeah. Kind of. I mean, I don't want to think that. I'd like to think that the way your hair looks doesn't have, like, a big impact. But I think it kind of...
But it does,
It kind
for
of
sure.
does.
Like, I'm strictly growing my hair out for the next 4 months. I'm doing protective styles, like, for the next, 4 to 6 months just to, like, grow it out again. Like, it's a chill.
Yes.
But, you know, that's the thing. It comes back. You just have to, like, chill.
So when it does grow back, are you going to get into, like, beauty treatments? Because I've got a lot of tips for you.
I mean, if you give me tips, then maybe I will. I just feel like I'm the worst
girl
when it comes to my hair.
I think that all of the, like, natural hair beauty experts make it seem so complicated that it just becomes like, I'm not doing any of that shit. Mm-hmm. Like, they're like, you know, like, whip your own shea butter and, like, harvest your own. Like, it's just like, it's like so much. And you're
true.
Like, oh my gosh, like, I'm not, like, going to plant seeds in my outdoor garden and, like, grind them. Like, I'm not going to do all of this.
Yeah.
There's a compromise in between that's not, like, all the way, like, Ayurvedic, hardcore, natural beauty that you can still, like, slowly but surely kind of, like, work on.
I also don't think that my grade of hair is not difficult for me. When it's natural, it's not it's not
that's a
hard
blessing.
On me.
That's
yeah, I think...
It does what you want it to do.
Yeah, I mean, I have really fine hair, and I always have. Even when
I have fine hair, too.
As a kid. So even when my hair is natural and... fresh out of the shower with nothing in it, it's totally manageable.
Okay.
There's a lot of women that don't have that, and it's really thick, and it's really coarse, and it's really long, and so for them, being natural is actually, like, quite a burden.
Yeah, it's like
for
a full-time
me,
job.
It's, like, very soft and easy to, you know, I can, it's, and I don't have a lot of it.
Right, so,
so
it makes it
it's
easier.
Not a big deal for me to be natural at all. It's really easy. Yeah.
When you, take me through your casting process, or even before we get to casting, are you on the cycle of, like, making... How many collections a year do you do?
We've done one collection a year.
Okay. Do you know who you remind me of in terms of, like, design process and just, like, overall feelings towards the industry?
Yeah.
Azzedine Alaya.
Really?
Have you heard about his whole vibe? Okay. I'm obsessed with him. He is complete, like, anti-fashion. He doesn't believe in, like, showing at Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. He also doesn't believe in, like, all of the, like, pre-fall, pre-spring, like, 15 million seasons, because he's, like, it's all bullshit. And, like, somehow he, like, pissed off Anna Wintour. Like, he's, like, never been featured in Vogue. Like,
I find that hard to believe.
They have, like, serious beef.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what he did.
Well, I have serious beef with Vogue, so.
Do you?
No, not really, but yes, also.
Wait, but what? Because I'm with Vogue specifically, or with Vogue, Harper's Bazaar, Elle?
No, Vogue.
Vogue.
Yeah.
I like worship at the altar of Vogue. Tell me what they did wrong.
They're just lame.
You just think it's just not.
It's just not it. They're not getting it right. They're not. It's like, it's just ironic, right? Because this magazine that is, not even magazine, this brand.
Yeah.
Right? That is iconic.
Mm-hmm.
And rightfully so for a lot of reasons and for many years.
Yeah.
It just so happens that they can't keep up when it comes to the future. When it comes to, well, I call the present the future. That's just something I say with my friends and stuff. But, like, we live in the future. I say that all the time.
Yeah.
And they just, they feel, there's, you know, certain brands that just don't get it. Like, you know, the Pepsi fiasco.
Oh, God.
You know, there's just certain times where I see them and I'm like, this is a mess. I mean, we're getting off topic, but, like, Vogue is a mess. I will say that
this is very
on the record. They are a hot mess.
This is very on topic. Wait.
And it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing because there's so many other magazines and so many other brands that are getting it, maybe not right, but definitely doing a lot better to put their finger on the pulse of the times. And that's what Vogue is supposed to do, or that's what they at least say that they do. And they're doing so the opposite of that that I get secondhand embarrassment for Vogue.
I feel like I'm embarrassed for you guys.
Yeah, but also, like, people like you and I are insiders, perhaps. Like, the average person who's living in, you know, Oklahoma or whatever, they still maybe think Vogue is, like, the pinnacle of all fashion reporting, whereas, like, any person on the inside knows that's not true.
So fashion reporting, I would agree, but I still think Vogue has, like, at least in their print magazine, has a very high standard in terms of, like, editorial direction, styling. You don't feel that?
I do feel that. That is,
like,
true.
I love Tawny Goodman. I think she's, like, the most amazing
stylist.
She's a genius.
That is true.
Everything is, like, so crisp and amazing, and, like, she puts things together and I'm like, this is perfection and this is you. I obviously, like, love Grace.
That is true, but I'm more so talking about, like,
Vogue.
The content, perhaps. Okay. Well, Vogue.com also feels like a blog to me. I also was very disappointed with emergence of Style.com to Vogue Runway. I mean, that's not a bad thing. It's just, for me being, like, an old school, like, Style.com reader, I obviously didn't love that.
Yeah.
But, like, it's more just, like, you know, their editorials are still awesome. Anytime I ever put anyone on the cover and style them and do their makeup, they always make them look exceptional.
Exceptional.
They have an amazing team of people that they work with. And in that regard, for sure, Vogue is still at the top. But in terms of, like, their content and the conversation that surrounds what they're putting out, I'm
super kind of
bored.
Lame. You're right.
It's really lame. Yeah.
It's kind of lame. It's,
I went to this, sorry.
No, please.
I went to this, Vogue invited me to this, like, I mean, they invite so many, whatever. This, like, and they do this all the time too, which is why I just kind of laugh. But
it's
like diversity in the fashion industry panel conversations that they do.
They've got to try.
But, like, if we're gonna do it, then let's do it.
Okay, so tell me about this panel.
Okay, so we did this panel at One World Trade, and it was like Virgil, Elaine,
Joel.
Abloh
from Off-White. Off-White.
Elaine Welsroth from Teen Vogue. Chioma from Vogue.
Okay.
And forget his name, the editor-in-chief of GQ. Can't remember. Point is, it's not even about the panelists. They were all fine. But there was an hour long. Spent the first 30 minutes essentially talking about the background of all of the people that were on the panel. Like, where Virgil came from and where Elaine came from a bit and where Chioma and blah, blah. I had to leave exactly in 1 hour because I was hosting an event at Soho House that evening. A dinner for our collection that we just put out.
Light flex?
Yeah. So I had to leave exactly in 1 hour, and I almost wasn't even going to go, but I was like, well, let me just go and see. And so I was so irritated the whole time I was there because the room was full of influencers. This wasn't something that was open to the public.
Okay.
It was full of designers, like Altazar was there, and I mean, you know, Anna obviously was there, and everyone, there tons of people that worked at Condé Nast, tons of people that didn't, designers, models, big models, like, you know, bloggers. It was full of influencers, and it wasn't even a huge group of people. I would say there might have been maybe 200 people there.
Okay.
So the first 30 minutes, we talk about the panelists, and then the second 30 minutes, the second half, they're like, we want to open up the floor, whatever.
For questions,
yeah. For questions, blah, blah, blah. What can we do to bring more diversity to the blah, blah? And so Grace Mahari spoke first, and right after her, I got the mic, and I was like, look.
Oh, gosh. As soon as you got the mic, people should have known.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, just announced, introduced myself. My name is Rachel. I own a small women's wear brand. You know, we keep talking about these trigger words like diversity and inclusion and representation, which to me are all tokenism.
Yep.
And that's not why we're here. I don't think that's why we're here. Mm-hmm. So tokenism is not the issue. There's plenty of representation for us everywhere, right? Yeah. We're on television. You put Lupita on the cover. Like, there's tons of black girls, Asian girls, like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's not the issue. The problem is there's no context. There's no frame of reference for what's going on behind that. And I think that if you guys really want to talk about fixing this issue, then we should really talk about it instead of wasting what we now have 26 minutes left to kind of skim over this topic that really is a huge topic. And next time, It's just not enough.
Yep.
It's not enough, and I felt like you're wasting everyone's time.
Yeah,
you brought us all the way over here,
right,
to talk about where Virgil's from. We all know who he is.
Yes.
We wouldn't be here.
Yeah, it's like, let's skip the introductions. We know who everyone is.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was borderline offensive to me, but also like spoken, and so I'm the type of person, you know what I mean, to say that, but. What I did get was a standing ovation, which, oh my God, Brooke, I'm not kidding. The minute I got done talking, I was so scared. Because I was talking
for the room freeze?
No, not really. It ended up being fine. But for myself, I was talking like from my heart and what I was just fidgeting in my, because I'm looking at my watch. Like, I have to go. And I wanted to come to this thinking that it might be something.
A real conversation about.
Yeah. Yes. And I was just like, Vogue, you guys are the same people. I said this. I was like, this is the same magazine that posted on Instagram not even a few days ago, like, activism is chic, get involved, and you guys are really, it's offensive, there's people that are dying over these it's like the same thing that people from the Pepsi commercial, like, I get that you want people to get involved, but
no, that's unacceptable.
It's not acceptable. It's totally tone deaf.
Yeah.
And stop wasting everyone's time. If you're gonna have us all come here, then let's get straight to the chase.
Yes.
If not, then keep talking about whatever you guys want to talk about, but don't pretend to want to make a difference if this is how you guys are.
Exactly.
I want to see a face. Like,
so you said this in front of this like whole room full
a
of like
whole room
editors,
of people
like
that
the
no
most
one knows
important
who I am.
People in fashion.
Yeah, and the minute I got done talking, I was literally shaking. I was like, oh my God, I just totally blacklisted myself. That was totally inappropriate. And I wasn't being disrespectful.
But instead, you probably did the opposite. You probably like made a huge impression on everyone there.
Oh, 100%. The minute it was over, everyone was like, I loved what you said. I want to talk to you, but I couldn't stay. I had to leave. So,
which makes you even more like mysterious and amazing. Like, just like come in, like drop like this like huge gem and then like run out the door.
I really wasn't even trying to be. But I just, you know, for me, it's harder to sit back and not say things sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like.
Yeah. Yes, and people probably applauded because everyone probably felt exactly
yeah,
the same
sure.
way you did, and they were like, thank God someone
said
something.
I think a lot of people were thinking the same thing. I didn't realize how many, but yeah. But that's just an example of like why Vogue just gets on my nerves, but they just like, don't try.
Do you think is doing a good job? Do you think any of the big, like, established brands are doing a good job?
Well, it's weird because I feel like Teen Vogue and Vogue, like, they almost don't even, like, do they speak to each other? Like, do they know the same people? Like,
they're pretty separate. They have to be. They're very separate.
You know? But I think Teen Vogue is doing a great job, especially for young girls. I mean, I don't really know if young girls, like, I wish I had a Teen Vogue that exists now.
Yes. I wish I had the existing version of Teen Vogue.
Exactly. I think they're doing a good job. And I think, like, you know, startups honestly are doing better jobs than these old corporations. Like, I think Emily is doing a great job with Glossier. I think she gets it because she's one of us, you know.
Yeah,
she's young and she started a blog that started a conversation about, like, really, I mean, bloggers, that whole landscape of just being able to speak out and having great taste and make great content, it shifted the whole paradigm.
It did.
And I know that there's a lot of editors that, like, don't like that, but
I know.
I think it's great.
I think it is really good. Do you miss blogging? I was going to ask you if you still blog, but, like, clearly you don't, because, like, no one blogs anymore.
No. Do I miss it? No, I don't miss it. I specifically stopped blogging because I didn't want to be a blogger, which is crazy that I was, like, thinking that far.
That far ahead. You were like, this is popular, but it's going to get played out, so, like, I'm going to.
Not that it's going to get played out. I mean, there's bloggers that made careers, and they did, you know, awesome things with it. But I didn't want to be a blogger come designer, like, turned to. I mean, I went to school for it, and I design, and I make patterns, and if, like, the world crashed tomorrow, I could sit there with paper and pencil, and I could make clothing, you know?
Make clothing, that's amazing.
And I wanted to be, I mean, I don't know how, like, quote-unquote seriously I'm taking as much I don't know how seriously I'm taking as much shit as I talk, but like I definitely wanted that to be like a strong point for me.
Yeah. And no, I think I think you're taken extremely seriously because the work speaks for itself. Like your personality aside, if someone just saw your clothes, they would be like, wow. I think your personality and your ability to be outspoken and fearless about that only complements your talent. Like it makes you stand out even more.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I want. But I mean I'm not mad at anyone trying to like do their thing and make money and do their thing. I just think, you know, there's some bloggers that like really kept the story moving.
Yeah.
And I find that interesting. And those mm-hmm. are the ones that obviously are yes. still around, or like, you know, Emily obviously now has like a product line, you know, she's actually offering products now.
Yeah.
And even Leandra Medin with Man Repeller, so many bloggers didn't really know how to write.
Yes.
And she actually was a good writer. And so yes. I always stayed loyal to that because I appreciate good mm-hmm. writing.
Of course.
Her sense of humor is not really my sense of humor, but I definitely appreciate like what she did
yep.
and what she built and everything around, you know, like a serious site about whatever, humorous fashion, whatever. And she's been able to like parlay yeah. that. And yeah. there's certain people that were able to like do something with yeah. it. And I just didn't want to have to be in a position where I was having to like figure out what that next thing was going yes. to be as a blogger.
I feel you. When you think about so I have two questions for you. My first question is there a moment within the past few years where you felt like you had made it as a designer? Like
No.
Like
no.
being featured in a certain magazine no, or no. someone wearing your...
No. We're nowhere near where I want to be yet.
Okay.
Not even close.
What is the type of woman you want wearing your clothes? Do you have that picture in your head?
No. Like, sometimes people will try to ask us this, and I always like, pivot, because I think...
Do you think it's someone like you? Or do you think for each piece you design, or do you have a different person in mind?
Well, okay, so here's the thing about the brand. I don't even really feel like I can call it a brand yet, because I really feel like that's up to consumers to say yeah. in a way, rather than me and like try to shove it down people's throat. But like I said, it's very autobiographical. At this point, it's still just me talking about things that I like.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that like the brand and myself is like a Venn diagram. So I'm kind of like the girl, and she's kind of like me, but there's definitely like, we're not the same person. I'm also like very hard on myself in terms of like what I want to
yeah,
accomplish.
Yeah, I can tell. Because you're like, you've been, by all like measures of traditional, like the way that we measure success in terms of like press and awareness, like you've had all of those things, but you still see yourself as like so far from
yeah, for sure.
having made it.
But you know, press is not, it's so fickle and it's not, it doesn't mean anything.
It does mean something. Maybe you've gotten to a point where you don't think it means something, but think about us growing up on the internet. If you had been 15
right. okay.
and read about a girl like you,
okay,
you
right.
would be like, whoa. Like, I mean, it's...
You're right.
You don't think about the thousands and thousands of guys and girls that are reading a story about you and thinking, oh, wow, I can be a fashion designer.
Yeah, I guess part of it is that I know the people that wrote about me. And so in that sense, it feels less
right.
like a thing. And you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. But for the kind of like reach and exposure that those publications have, and mm-hmm. the amount of people that you're able to touch just with your story, it's huge. Because you know, we were talking about this earlier in terms of like representation and knowing what's possible. We all probably like I got into blogging because I didn't see people like me in like the mainstream mm-hmm. like digital media. So mm-hmm. like that's why we all created our own blogs. Mm-hmm. So when you do see stories like yours, it's inspiring. You know.
Thank you. I have to remind myself
yes.
of that. Yeah, I do, because I definitely don't do that enough. I'm definitely like, okay, we're gonna do this next. We're doing this next. Like, wait till we're here.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, there's a lot of people that like will Instagram or DM or something that are like, thank you, or keep going. And then, but I don't know. I mean, aren't you like that? Like, do you ever like feel like people? Are you not harder on yourself? Like some people, maybe
no.
like your perception is like to other people's like, oh my gosh, she's so this, but you just feel so down. Like not.
I'm not hard on myself.
Deprecating, but like just grounded. You don't see yourself as like as cool, maybe as other people see.
I mean, I don't think people think I'm cool. I think they do. Really?
I thought you were cool when I saw you on Glamorous Eccentric.
Oh well, yeah, we were like teenagers then. I mean, I think,
but still.
Yeah, no, I think I think...
Oh, come on. No, pause. I have to like, drill this home. There's tons of people that think you're cool. I'm sure. You,
really?
Like... Yeah, you're, like, a black girl who lives in New York. That alone, already, people think is, like, pretty crazy. And you have this, like, a beautiful wedding, and you're on Vogue, or you... You know, some people just... You don't know what... And I guess I should be saying this to myself. You have no idea what...
That's true. When I was living in London, I was in British Vogue. It was like a holiday shopping guide, and like they like followed me for one day, like shopping. I mean, obviously all staged because of this Vogue.
Yeah.
And like all of these people, like just like girls from the internet, like reached out, like, I saw you in Vogue today. Like, it's amazing. I'm like, wow, like people actually care.
Yeah. So people think you're cool for sure.
But even what did I say? As soon as you came over, I was like, it's crazy to me that you listen to my podcast. Like,
which is not crazy to me at all.
It is crazy. Because one, it's like an hour-long commitment. So to everyone listening, like, thank you. And it's, but because you think, I don't know. I think that you get into a point if you're creating anything, whether it's content or clothing, where you're creating without the understanding of like people consuming it after. At least for me.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like in a creation mode, and you're not thinking about how are people gonna.
But that's also beautiful.
Yeah.
Because you get a lot of magical moments that way. And it resonates in ways that you couldn't even imagine with other people.
True.
You know? I'm not like a jack of all trades kind of person. I'm definitely focused on like building a fashion brand
and
specifically. And focusing on that and getting it really good and getting building a product range. Like I want to do like big business.
Yeah. Which
sounds crazy, kind of.
No, not at all. I mean, one of the things I really admire about you is that you realize that in order to build your brand, you had to, like, quit everything else. You became, like, a babysitter, right?
Yeah.
You were, like, a nanny. Yep. So that you could have a flexible schedule and do what you wanted to, like, make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes that courage to, like, make that jump.
Yeah. I wanted to... Yeah, for sure. I always knew that this is what I wanted to do. Probably... Not always, but, I mean, probably since I was, like, 17, 18, or at least when I decided to go to school. I think that I probably started out on my own... A bit too green than I should have or should have, whatever that means.
Okay, that's a point that I want to talk about. Being naive, I think, is like the key to success.
That's what I hear.
No, honestly, like people will be like, I really want to start a podcast, but like I don't know where to start, and like I need to find a studio and an editor. And I'm like, when I wanted to start a podcast, I literally like Amazon.com, like ordered some equipment and just like did it. Like I didn't.
Yeah.
I honestly didn't. Think about it. I didn't think about it being perfect. I was like, I'm just going to start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't, like, what's the standard? I don't know. I'm just going to put it out there in the world. And if people like it,
they like it.
Are like your top three ultimate favorite beauty products?
I'm really quite basic.
Okay. So you have like a simple beauty routine.
Totally. It's not exciting at all.
Okay.
It's concealer, powder, and mascara. That's
concealer, powder, mascara.
That's it.
What concealer do you use?
Well, this is really crazy because... For years, I would have sworn that I wore Bobbi Brown in Chestnut.
Okay.
Foundation stick. It's a little concealer stick. But Glossy just sent me this freaking package the other day, and now I'm obsessed with their stretch concealer, which I did not think I would be.
Oh, wow. Wait, they sent it to you like because you're like an influencer and cool?
No. Well, I mean, I don't know. That's weird. But we just did a feature with them.
Okay.
And so Tom Newton, hi Tom, the guy that shot us... I sent him a gift, the same gift that I have here for you today. And he, in return, sent me a bunch of Glossier. Because in the conversation, he was like, have you tried this of ours? Because I already have a lot of Glossier stuff that I've bought as a customer. And he was like, have you tried this and that? And I said, I don't think you make it in my color. And he was like, no, we totally do. And I was like, I don't think you do. And he was like, wait. And so he sent me this whole package of stuff, of goodies.
That's dope. I need to try their products.
And one of them was a concealer. And so now... I will say that my new favorite thing is their stretch concealer, which is crazy.
Stretch concealer.
That's what it's called.
And what shade do you wear?
I don't know. Whatever shade he gave me.
Okay. Amazing.
This shade.
So you do concealer, mascara. What's your mascara brand? Your eyelashes, are those real? Is that rude of me to ask?
No.
Your eyelashes are insane.
Thank you.
Do you curl them?
No, I don't do anything to them but put mascara on them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Because you've got the bottom lashes popping.
Yeah. It's all mascara. It's all YSL mascara.
Okay.
And I use that same mascara to fill in my brows. And that's literally all I do.
You use the mascara to fill in your brows.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because people are like buying these like brow gels, which are pretty much just mascara that you just put on your eyebrows.
I mean, I bought Boy Brow because I love Glossier, but, like, honestly, the wand isn't big enough for me, and I just use mascara. Okay. So those are literally the only three things that I use on my face every day.
You don't do blush or anything?
That's all I have on today. I really think sweating every day is good for your skin.
Totally. So are you a workout girl?
Not like a girl. Like, I do all it. Like,
so like, I'm not Hannah Bronfman.
Yeah, more power to her because she's awesome when it comes to it. I wouldn't say like I'm a gym rat or anything, but like I do think that it's important to do that.
Yeah. What are you into? Do you do yoga, Pilates?
Yoga and also just like good old-fashioned going to the gym.
Okay. Like, are you treadmill? Treadmill and podcast. Like, that's like my Netflix and chill.
For like
treadmill and podcast.
I'll do a treadmill for like 15 minutes, just like warm up. So okay, here's the thing. I go to the YMCA. I live in Brooklyn. It's right down the street from my house, and so is my yoga studio. So I'll do a combination of the two. It's either I'll go to the gym and then I'll go to yoga right afterwards. Sorry. Either I'll go to the gym and I'll go to yoga right afterwards, or I'll go to the yoga and then I'll go to the gym. But like, there has to be a combination because yoga doesn't really make you.
Oh my gosh, it's not. You can't like.
Lose weight. Like, it doesn't really do anything. I mean, I...
It's great to stretch. Stretching. Yeah. You seem like, though, like you're naturally slim. Like, even if you didn't do anything, you'd still probably be...
Probably because I always have been and I'm Kenny. I think it is genetic.
Yes.
But I am way more aware of...
overall wellness.
Yeah. Than I used to be, for sure.
Yeah.
Not because I like got crazy out of control, but just because I had started to notice like, okay, this might be genetics, but do you want to wait to see and find out if it's not? Like, you should still try to. But I grew up dancing.
Oh, you did? What kind of dance did you do?
Ballet, like contemporary jazz, tap, like the whole, everything the studio offered. Cool. They made us do ballet because they were like, that's your core technique. But
Yes. I did all of that stuff too.
So that's why I like yoga so much, because it just kind of keeps me flexible, and it's like, it's similar, kind of.
Okay.
Not really, but. Okay. Other than that, sweating every day is really good for your pores. Okay. Opens up your pores.
It does.
And then, like, coconut oil or shea butter.
Coconut oil, like, even though there's not a coconut oil company, but, like, if I could have a sponsor for this podcast, it would be coconut oil.
Coconut oil companies, Colebrook.
I mean, it literally comes up every episode, because everyone is obsessed. Everyone is obsessed with coconut oil because you can use it for your hair, you can use it to shave your legs, you can use it as a moisturizer.
Well, that's the only thing I use it for, is that.
A moisturizer.
Yeah, I don't use it for anything else.
Okay.
Like hair, like body.
Do you cook with it?
No.
Oh, it's amazing to cook with. I use olive oil.
Is there a benefit to using coconut versus olive oil?
Flavor-wise, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I made like a very like Thai dish, and I did the broccoli and coconut oil, and it tasted really amazing. I did like a chicken satay with peanut and coconut oil.
You're a cooker? You like to cook?
I love to cook.
I wish I did. I wish I could say that, because I feel like it's a very sexy thing to say.
I love to cook. And it's so funny, because on my Instagram story, I'm always, like, cooking. And, like, my brother, like, messaged me yesterday, and he was like, Martha Stewart, your Instagram stories are becoming so boring. Like, please stop cooking every single day. And what are the fashion trends, or beauty trends? Mm-hmm. Let's keep it in the beauty realm. What are the beauty trends that you are, like, over?
Beauty trends that I'm over...
Yeah.
Beauty trends that I'm over. I'm just not really... I'm kind of over just the whole... So, a homeboy of mine, he coined the term HD. HD girls is what he calls them.
Okay.
Meaning they look really great if they're going to be in high-definition camera, but in real life, they're insane.
Okay. Yep.
So just the whole contouring, like, extravaganza, the whole, like, tons of makeup thing. It's not even that the makeup is done poorly.
Yes. It's just too much.
It's just a little too... But it also... That could just be my person.
No. You're right. I'm just going to decide for you. You're right. Because girls are doing way too much.
It's a lot. It's the brows. It's, you know, the eyeshadow and the contour and the lip color. And I just really... I don't know. I'm just one of those less is more kind of people, and I just pick one, like do a great color and lashes and be done. Or, you know, just keep it simple and fresh, and I don't know. I would really love to see that dye.
Are there any other beauty trends that you just like really don't like?
Just plastic surgery.
Really?
Yeah.
What's your issue with plastic surgery?
I don't really have an issue with it if you want to like tweak something and then keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
I get a little concerned about like the mental health state of people that are like, I just find, I've heard that it can be very addicting, which it seems like a natural thing that it become addicting.
Are you including cosmetic surgery in that? So like Botox, Restylane?
I'm not a fan of any of it.
Okay.
But also like, well, for me.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people get stuff done. I have friends that have gotten Botox and whatever.
So I can just like start. I mean, here's the thing. I've spoken about this on the podcast before. I did Restylane. It's completely worn off now. It's been like a year. Like,
I don't even know what that is. I'm saying I don't like it. I don't know. What is that?
You like it? Like, so I have like hollows under my eyes.
But that's hot.
Okay. That is another person's interpretation. I was like, I always look tired, so I'm going to like plump up under my eyes. And honestly, like to be 100% honest, like I didn't even get enough to like make a difference because I was so scared of looking like I got anything done. And the woman, when she was putting it in, she was like, this is going to be very minimal. And I remember showing my husband and my parents and they were like,
you don't see anything?
You spent $800 for this? Like, you look exactly the same.
What was it supposed to do? It was supposed to like fill this?
Like fill in.
Is it filler?
It's filler.
What they call filler? Okay.
For like the hollows under the eyes. So I probably wouldn't do it again because I agree with you sort of like your face is your face. Just work with it. But I'm also relatively young and I don't know how I'm going to feel in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Like maybe after I have children, I'll want to get a little like lift.
Yeah, I thought about that. Maybe if I have children, I might want to get like a little tuck or like some type of scar removal or, you know, I think the scar removal thing is genius and beautiful. And that's actually crazy technology that you can do stuff like that.
Yeah.
That doesn't even necessarily have to be like because you're vain. It could just be because you got in a car accident, whatever.
Right.
Who knows? Maybe if like children have been like feeding off of these, I might want to like get implants. I don't know. But my natural gut instinct being myself is that I doubt that I would.
Like, don't mess with yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I just. I don't know. Even like, that's the beauty term that I want to die is that like people feeling like because they know that they can fix it, they are going to try to fix it rather than just be like, because like for me, I do recognize that you might feel that your eyes are hollow underneath. Yeah. It's not like I'm like, that doesn't exist. Like, but I also think it's beautiful.
It's kind of like, it reminds me of like kind of how I feel about my natural hair.
Mm-hmm.
I got to a point where I realized I'm never going to have like the perfect twist out. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just going to be like this. This is how it is.
It's great.
But it's like mine. And it's almost like I've stopped holding myself to the standard of like Pinterest and like YouTube natural hair beauty standards. Like, it's not in the cards for me. So I'm just going to like work with what I've got.
I mean, if I was looking for imperfections in my face and I truly felt they were there and they were like consuming me in a way that I really walked myself to an appointment.
True.
And there's something wrong with that person. See, I feel like that's a politically correct answer to say. I don't even agree with that. I don't really think, I don't know. It's a fine line.
Yeah. It kind of comes back to this idea about like policing women's, like who, you know, people got so mad at Kendrick Lamar for that lyric.
That line. But I didn't mind.
But I didn't mind it at all. I was actually kind of confused by the backlash and I had to kind of like read about it to be like, wait, why is everyone mad? But their point was, don't tell me how to filter my pictures.
Wasn't saying that.
Don't tell me that natural is better. Don't tell me that wearing no makeup is better. If I want to have a full face and be like beat to the gods and have a weave and like, you know, face tune all of my pictures and like cinch in my waist and get butt implants, like I should be allowed to do that. Don't tell me that that's not as beautiful as who I am naturally.
I don't think he was telling anyone anything. He's an artist, and I think he was just expressing himself, which is his right. But I do actually think that if somebody wanted to do that, I would say you should just reevaluate yourself. Truly.
Well, but isn't there judgment in that? Isn't there some judgment in us thinking that women who do want to do that need to reevaluate?
No, because you're judging yourself more harshly than I could ever judge you. You're doing that to yourself, which is why you want to fix all of those things. It's like I said, I don't have a problem with plastic surgery or something if you're going to fix a little something. If you're like, I want to get a breast lab, I want to get my some Botox, I want to. But there are a lot of women who once they start, they can't stop.
True.
And I think there's something to be said about that. Like, you want to get this, and then you want to get your breasts, and then you're already wearing like, it's too much. That was the answer to my question. It's too much.
Too much.
It's like eyelashes and ass and boobs and Botox and weave and hair. It's like nails. And at some point, it's like there are some women, they may not be you or me, but there are some women who truly don't feel comfortable walking out of their house unless they're totally, all of those components are together. I don't know.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's a very real thing, and I don't want to judge those women, but even I've seen things like the no makeup challenge where people challenge themselves to not wear makeup, and I'm like, is it that hard?
Is it that deep?
Is it that brave to go outside without makeup?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is, and I'm being judgmental about women that feel like they need to wear makeup every day.
But, like, whatever. I'm not playing that game. Trump is president. The political correctness is out the window. Like, I'm not playing that game. Like,
right.
Oh, I don't want to say, like, the fact right. is you're judging right. yourself more harshly than yes. I could ever do it. So don't talk to me about how I'm, do you know what I'm saying?
You're right.
Don't talk to me about how I'm judging you. You're not comfortable with the way you look.
True.
And all I'm doing is noticing that. Do you know what I'm saying? And right, I'm right. judgmental? Like, that's
right,
crazy.
Right, right, right.
You think about it.
Yeah. I'm very interested in your answer to this last question.
I'm scared.
Don't be scared. I ask everyone.
Okay.
And everyone's always like, oh my God, why would you ask me that? Okay, so the question is, when do you feel the most beautiful?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't...
So,
I don't know.
So my answer kind of varies, but I think, so what's interesting to me is some people, a lot of people will say, like, it's when I'm fresh out of the shower and, like, I've put coconut oil all over my body and I'm just, like, clean and feeling good. Other people will be like, it's when I've had a professional makeup artist, like, beat my face and I'm wearing, like, an amazing dress and, like, high heels. I think for me, my answer varies depending on, like, my mood. And sometimes it's related to, like, people. So, like, when I'm around people like me, then that can sometimes make me feel more beautiful. Sometimes it's, like, accomplishing something. So, like, Gillian, who I interviewed, she was saying, like, she feels most beautiful when she accomplishes something that people told her that she couldn't accomplish. So she, like, got this, like, Saint Laurent DJ gig, and people told her, like, it would never happen. And she just, like, walked out beaming when she found out that she booked it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the word beautiful in this case is, like, very malleable then, because I feel
like... Yeah, no, it's totally, totally open to interpretation.
When do I feel the most beautiful? I mean, for all the feminists out there, they're going to hate this answer.
No, go for it. I don't...
I feel the most beautiful, I suppose, when, like, when I'm in love.
Hmm, yeah.
And when I have, like, no makeup on. And, yeah. Because I don't... The reason why I said, like, the feminist comments is, like, I hate to attach it to the...
Attention of a man
type yeah. of thing. But I would say, like, when I'm in love with somebody and we're just being like, which is really only, it hasn't happened many times, honestly. But just that type of like transparency, like whether it's like laying in bed or having to make, yes. or like being yourself around someone
yes.
else.
Yes. That, and when you feel like they see you mm-hmm. as you.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're accepting it and they're still, you know, they're appreciating it and living it. You can get that from like your girlfriends, of course,
true.
Or like whatever. But yeah. I think there's something just different about.
Totally.
Yeah, like being with a man and then like loving you and seeing you for who you are, and like I think yeah, that's like a super vulnerable position to be in.
It is.
Sometimes.
And sometimes that vulnerability makes you feel more beautiful,
exactly.
you know?
Exactly. When they're like totally comfortable with you and like still very yeah, I would say like when I'm in love or
yeah.
something like that.
No, that's I totally understand that. So you're like low key romantic.
Oh yeah.
That's awesome.
For sure. Yeah.
I feel like we could have done, like, 15, like, honestly, we've spoken for an hour and a half, and we could talk about so much more.
It's 9.
Yeah, it's late.
I know.
You'll have to come back and, like, do the
I
show again, to. And we can, like, do multiple.
This is great. Everybody try to convince Brooke to do her, well, this is her own show, but, like, another bigger own show.
I know. And
you're really good at this.
Thank you. I've been putting out 2 a month, which I'm, like, very committed to doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever like get enough stamina, I can try to do like every week, but.
Well, you do it outside of working a 9-to-5.
I know.
Would you ever want this to be your 9-to-5?
If
you're 9-to-5, if this paid as much as your job does right now, which one would you pick?
Oh, absolutely. Talking to people that I like and admire, I would pick this.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, so then there you go.
Yeah. Okay, something to think about.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming on the Naked Beauty Podcast.
I love Naked Beauty.
Yes.
Big fan.
And good to reconnect with an old friend.
Of course, yeah. Blogspot.com.